This is Dennis Berger conducting an oral history interview with Mr. Earl Hayes for the Vietnam Archive at Texas Tech University. Today's date is 4 August 2008. I am in Lubbock, Texas, and Mr. Hayes is in Carbers Ridge, Illinois. Mr. Carber, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, some questions here. Number one, when and where were you born? Okay. And what was your family background?
Not really sure of the question.
Well, you know, what occupation was your father in? Did you guys live in town, out of town, that sort of thing?
A diamond driller and exploration for minerals for the mining companies and such. Mom was a housewife, part-time waitress.
So mining runs in your family? Could you describe for me briefly what your childhood was like?
Well, with Dad moving around all the time, we moved various amount of times from until my older brothers and sisters got in high school, and then we quit moving around. I'd say I had a normal childhood.
Okay. And along those lines, did you have any particular interests while in high school? While you were attending high school, anything particular you did or enjoyed?
No, not really, just a typical high school kid.
Okay. Where did you attend basic training?
Fort Bliss, Texas.
Okay, and when was that exactly?
Where?
When?
I got drafted on the 25th day of September 1967.
And did you report right away, or...?
Well, yeah, we went to St. Louis, and they distributed us from there. Generally, people from here went down to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, but all of their facilities were full, so that's how come I ended up in Texas.
Okay. In those days, how long was Army basic training?
8 weeks.
8 weeks, okay. What were your memories of basic training?
The biggest problem I had with basic training in Texas in September was ungodly hot. Fort Bliss is in El Paso, Texas, West Texas, right on the New Mexico border, and it's nothing but desert down there.
But other than that, no other striking memories of anything besides the heat?
Other than the large numbers.
So it was a pretty busy time at Fort Bliss in those days?
Pardon me?
It was a pretty busy time for Fort Bliss?
Oh, yeah. Fort Bliss is a training center for Patriot missiles and such, and they just made a place for basic training, actually is what they did.
Okay, what was going to be your job in the Army? Do you feel that both or neither basic training or advanced school adequately prepared you for what you experienced in Vietnam?
The mechanics, yes. I don't suppose anything or any amount of training will prepare you for the psychological part.
Okay. Do you feel that all your instructors were professional? Or as professional as could be in that time period?
About 90%, 95% of our instructors, drill instructors, and people that were teaching the classes were Vietnam returnees, and they were sincere in trying to teach us what they knew we had to have to stay alive.
Okay. After you left advanced school, what units were you assigned to?
Initially was assigned to the 4th Infantry Division. It was where my orders were for, but by the time we got to Vietnam, the 101st Airborne Division needed replacements, and that's where I ended up.
Okay. And what part of the 101st were you assigned to?
I was assigned to D Company, 1st Battalion, 501st Infantry.
Okay. When you first got to Vietnam, what were your impressions of the country and of our mission there?
I didn't much think about our mission at all. I had orders to go and I went. And I, excuse me, I knew I was going to do what I was ordered to do. That's the way it's always been in our family. When our nation called, we went. That's just part of our tradition.
Was there a certain amount of regret or fear on the home front for your family when you got your orders?
I'd say probably fear, yeah. I had an uncle that was killed in World War II, and my grandparents and my mother, my dad had passed away, and my mother was pretty apprehensive about letting me go, but there wasn't anything we could do.
Right. Okay. Going back in country, when you first arrived there, did you arrive at Thompson Newt, or how did you get in country?
We landed at Cameron Bay.
Cameron Bay. And what was your impression when you got off the airplane with the smell and the heat and everything?
Well, one of the first things I noticed was the smell, and naturally the heat as soon as they opened the plane door. Cameron Bay was a vast base. It was probably one of the largest bases in Vietnam for American forces, and you really didn't notice or pay any attention other than in the back of your mind that you were in a war zone because everything was hectic.
Okay.
Like being in a large city.
Large city. Kind of describe it for me, will you? I've seen photographs of it, but never, not being there. Were all four services stationed out of there, or is it anyone in particular that owned it?
All four were there.
Okay.
And one of the busiest airports in Vietnam at the time. There's a jet taking off, I think they said, every minute and 30 seconds.
Okay. Did they give you a lot of time to, when you first got there, give you a lot of time to get used to being in country, or did you?
No, we didn't have a whole lot of time. I was there an extra 3 or 4 days. That's where they reassigned me. Evidently, the 4th Infantry Division didn't need me, and we were held over a group of us. I don't remember how many, probably maybe 100 were held, about 3 extra days or maybe 4, so they could cut our new orders and arrange transportation for us to go north.
Okay. In the time you were at Cameron, did you notice any kind of animosity between people who were going to be in forward areas versus those who were rear echelon?
No, not really.
Not really? Okay.
Okay.
Once you got to your unit, how would you rate the capability of the leaders from the squad level up?
Now, repeat the question.
Once you got into your unit, to D Company, how would you rate the leaders in that company, from the squad, leader all the way up to company commander and a higher?
The leadership at the time that I got with the 101st Airborne Division was top-notch. It was, I couldn't have asked for better. At the time, I didn't realize it, but all of our platoon leaders were West Point graduates. Our company commander, I think this was probably his second or third tour, and everybody was professional, and they treated you as a professional also after you got a little time under your belt.
Did a lot of that 101 mystique or reputation?
The esprit de corps was there. they were there, and they intended to uphold their name and their reputation, and we did.
Good. Okay. Now let's look at the enemy, both Viet Cong and the PAVN. How would you rate their capabilities?
The capabilities, I got there after the main part of the Tet Offensive in February of 1968. I got there on the sixth day, well, not to the company, but I got there in March. The Viet Cong weren't really all that active. The 101st Airborne Division and the people in Northern High Corps was dealing with was the remainders of the invasion force, the North Vietnamese Regular Army. They were very professional. They intended to kill you.
Okay. Of the two, which one would you rather face, or is there no choice?
Personally, you know, I mean, the North Vietnamese Army was as professional as we were. If I had to make a choice, I'd rather go up against the guerrilla. He's not as well trained and as well equipped as the North Vietnamese Army was.
All right. Okay, let's talk about some of the things you might have been involved with. Did you participate in Operation Nevada Eagle? Okay, what was the purpose behind that operation?
To be honest with you, I don't really remember, other than search and destroy and to keep our area of operation clear of the enemy.
Okay, and what part of country was that located in?
I was stationed outside of Wei and Phu Bai in Northern High Corps.
Okay, and it basically consisted of just a lot of patrolling?
Yeah, we walked around every day looking for a fight.
Okay. Were you trying to deny the enemy any logistics, foodstuffs?
Oh yeah, anytime we found large amounts of rice, foodstuffs, medical supplies, they were always loaded up and sent, I'm assuming, to the South Vietnamese government and their army.
Okay. Was that a successful operation?
Very successful. They had weapons caches and food caches all over our area of operation.
Did you serve in the ASHAW?
No, I never went into ASHAW. We were just across the mountain range from it, but our area of operation didn't include that.
Okay. So in addition to Nevada Eagle and the I Corps, what else anything were you involved with during your time in country?
Well, there's five major campaigns: Nevada Eagle, Caratan 1, Caratan 2,
Okay, can you describe those for me, with their purpose and
they, basically everything we had was doing at the time I was there was a counter-offensive campaign. We were on the offensive. We were trying to hunt down the remainders of the North Vietnamese Army and to kill or capture them. That's all there was to it. And we were intended to clear out our area of operation, and we did. By the time I left there, our area of operation was quiet.
So there wasn't this recurring enemy action after you left an area, them coming back in and backfilling it, like you hear about a lot?
Repeat that.
There wasn't a lot of that same problem where, you know, where most times you hear about clearing an area, then you move on and they come back in behind you. That wasn't a problem?
Not a whole lot, no. You know, once in a while you'd run into your little local VC operative when you went back through part of your area of operation. We patrolled it like a city policeman on foot patrol would. We went from point A to point B. We, you know, basically walked a beat.
Hey, if you patrol an area several times, do you become familiar with the locals? We kind of pick out who the VC were or whatever?
The locals, well, they wanted what we would give them, but they weren't overly friendly.
Okay. So, would you describe for me, generally, what a patrol would be like? Duration, that sort of thing?
If we were already in the bush, depended on whose turn it was to be on point that particular day. We moved out in the order of the day, you know, the point platoon, the point squad. Followed in the company commander's plan and basically walked around looking for the enemy.
Okay. And on average, how many times a month do you think you went on patrol? For me, did you have a base camp and then a rear echelon headquarters?
Well, the rear echelon headquarters was in the southern part of the country. It was outside of Benoit. We had forward base camps, LZ Sally, Eagle, Camp Eagle, and places like that, after we were out for so long, then they'd pull us back to the rear for clean clothes, a shower, and basically kind of rest a little.
Okay.
Even though we were supposed to be an airborne outfit, I wasn't jump qualified to begin with. I never jumped out of an airplane, but they never jumped. We operated just like any non-airborne infantry outfit in the country. Lived off what we had on our back, anywhere from 40 to 75 pounds in a rucksack.
Okay, so your main mode of transportation was either foot or truck, never a helicopter?
Feeder helicopter.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about people in the Army while you were in? How would you describe race relations in your unit? Even though this is 68 and with everything happening back home?
You have to understand, the majority of the people that was in the 101st Airborne Division by the time I got there were volunteers. They had volunteered to jump out of an airplane. So when the majority of the division went to Vietnam in December of 67, they were volunteers and they were there with them. And there was a large black community within the 101st Airborne Division. We never had racial problems at all. My first squad leader was a black man, a fine fella. Couldn't ask for a better squad leader.
Is that pretty much the same way that your whole tour, or did it change toward the end of the tour?
I never experienced any racial problems at all.
No problems at all.
I got back to the States.
And what was that?
Well, there's a lot of animosity. I did 6 months in Fort Carson, Colorado with the 5th Mechanized Infantry, and it was the blacks stayed off to themselves. Had a black buddy, he was a good buddy, and you know, you just didn't go off to yourself much.
Okay.
You always wanted to make sure there was somebody around.
So there was a lot of racial tension back stateside, but...
Yeah, a lot of racial tension stateside. I was glad to get away from it.
Okay, what about the issue of drugs and alcohol? We hear so much about that.
I didn't see too much of hard drugs. Marijuana was plentiful. Alcohol, you know, we were issued one beer and one soda a day when we got resupplied when we were in the field. There was no drug use in our outfit while we were in the field. That would that'd get you hurt. Catch somebody smoking marijuana while he's supposed to be taking his turn at guard at night in the night defensive perimeter. You thumped his head.
So in the field, everybody pretty much...
Pardon me?
In the field, everybody pretty much stayed straight, and then...
Yep.
Okay.
Do what you want to do when you get in the rear. As long as you're not going to endanger our life, we don't care. But if you're going to endanger our life, we're going to take drastic measures to stop it.
Was that a informal policy by leadership, or was that just within the platoons?
Just the different companies and the different people.
Okay.
I don't know about the rest of the outfits. We operated on such a strenuous schedule that we very seldom ever got to visit with any of our sister companies or battalions or anything. I mean, when we went to the rear, we were there for 4 or 5 days, and we had, you know, we had security to take care of on the bunker line and to make sure everything was secure, but we still got to sleep on a cot and under a roof.
Which was a whole lot better than being up in base camp, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Within limits, do you think that command did everything it could for the morale of the troops in the field? I mean, you see so many things like, you see USO tours on, but I've heard folks say that was demeaning to
Well,
them and.
USO tours, we were so far up north that most of the USO tours we got couldn't speak very well, English very well. What was the native language of the Philippines, most of our USO shows were Filipino. There's a lot of things that could have been done probably a little better for us up north. Like, for instance, when the Bob Hope show came at Christmas time, you were allowed like four people out of the battalion. If there was four rifle companies in the battalion, you got one man from each company that got to go down to see the Bob Hope show. That wasn't really too cool, nice, the way I think.
Okay. What about other types of morale at issues at, I guess, at base camp? Clubs, recreation, opportunities?
We didn't. Our base camp was so sparse that we had a little plywood hut that had a cooler in it to keep our beer cool, and that was about it. You know, I mean, we didn't have any, like, Benoit or Tonsonute, any place like that. We didn't have any big fancy clubs with music and everything. We pretty much lived by our bootstraps.
Okay.
The only difference between us and the Marine Corps was the name. We lived just like they did. They were just up the road a ways.
Okay. Would you take a minute and describe for me what a typical base camp would look like?
Well, most of our base camps were generally on a knoll. Or Constantina wire all the way around it and your bunker lines. We eventually got plywood huts, buildings with tin roofs on them, and got rid of the leaky tents. They were dry and dusty. During the dry season, when it rained, they were nothing but mud. You had your latrine, and your shower with the water tank on top of it. Helipads where your helicopters come in and picked up their resupply material, your motor pool, and then you had your artillery batteries stationed around over your base camp pointed in different directions.
Hot chow?
Yeah, we had a mess area. Generally, they put on two hot meals and one cold meal a day. That goes. Breakfast and evening meal were hot meal.
Okay. Let's see here. Hey, after you left Vietnam, you said you went to the 4th MEC.
Went to the 5th Mechanized Infantry.
Okay.
Fort Carson, Colorado.
Okay, you left that. And what did you do after you left the 4th Mechanized?
Pardon me?
What did you do after you left Fort Carson?
Came back home, went back to work.
Walked right into the same job.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. In your time in the Army, from basic training to the time you walked out the door at Fort Carson, did you notice any changes in the professionalism of the NCO Corps?
There's quite a bit of change at Fort Carson. Fort Carson was a holding outfit, holding division. They had one battalion in Vietnam. The others were four. Riot duty and or European service if we had to go. The NCOs, let me finish, I'm getting ahead of myself here. A lot of the majority of the people in the infantry companies in Fort Carson were people that had been in the Fitzsimmons General Hospital in Denver. They were shot up pretty bad, basically weren't physically able to do much. And that led all they wanted was out of the Army. The ones of us that were still in good shape, tried to be as professional as we could, but it was really hard to do because of they pulled some pretty silly stuff. You know, I mean, here you've got people that really need to be walking with a cane because they've had a leg shot, excuse me, a leg shot up pretty bad, or it wasn't a pretty place anyway, and but they'd send you out with your armored personnel carriers and your tanks up in the mountains on field problems and stuff like that with people that weren't physically able to do it, and there was a lot of morale problems there. Everybody was short due to get out of the Army within some of, you know, days, weeks, and months.
So do you think that shortness led to a lot of discipline problems?
Yes, it did. A lot of discipline problems.
But nobody left because they're just that short, right?
We've had some with weeks to go that went AWOL. They bring them back. They were having a problem coping with the stateside Army.
Right.
Which was a whole lot different. The discipline was different. The military courtesy was different. Vietnam, you didn't salute an officer at all. That gets you in more trouble than not saluting, because the officers didn't want to be recognized.
Okay.
And then you come back to stateside Army with the reveille formation, noon formation, and retreat formations in the evening, and it was hard for people to do that. They weren't used to the discipline. They were used to a year carrying a rifle, you know, looking for somebody to shoot at.
Okay. Well, let me know this. How would you rate your Army experience? Was it generally positive or generally negative?
I'd say my experiences were positive. In less than 2 years, I was an E5, a buck sergeant. First got out of the service, I wasn't proud of my military service because of the feeling that pretty much the feeling in this country when I got home wasn't really good. It was a pretty much anti-military, anti-war. We drove through the hecklers and the protesters when we left Oakland to come home, you know, and the egg throwing at the taxis and stuff like that. That wasn't very positive, but as I got closer to home, and well, you've been to Marion, Illinois. That's where the closest airport is.
Mm-hmm.
The farther closer we got to home, the more patriotism you could feel. I mean, everybody in the little town I'm from, was raised in, would shake your hand, you know, welcome home thing. So yeah, my military experience was positive.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Have you ever thought about going back to Vietnam?
No.
No. Okay. What are your feelings toward the Vietnamese people?
The Vietnamese people?
The people.
My attitude toward the people has changed a lot. When I the first 15 years I was home, I had no use for them at all. I realized that the civilian populace didn't have anything to do with the way their military did or didn't handle the war situation. I still have a little bit of a problem associating with them, but that's something that I have to deal with.
Okay. I guess last question. In general, how did your Vietnam experience influence you in later years?
Gave me a whole lot more respect for the men and women in our military today. It gave me a whole lot more respect for the veterans that were before me and the ones that are after me. I may not support what's going on in the world right now with our military, but I will stand behind and support every man and woman that's in uniform, regardless of the branch of service they're in. For my Vietnam experience, I think, made me love my country a little more after I got home.
That's great. Any last thoughts you may have, stuff we've talked about that's come up? that you've thought about since we've left that particular question?
Repeat that, please.
You have anything you might have remembered, you know, after we left a particular question, something might have came up?
No.
That you want to add to this?
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your help.
Get to be really tight with them, and if something happens, one gets hurt or killed, you feel a loss and you feel it really bad. The new people would come in just like they did with me, and everybody wasn't really wanting to get acquainted with them because the realization was there that they might not be there tomorrow. But once you got in your rifle squad, you were, I'm sure you've heard the phrase in the movie Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the other branches of service feel. See, the Band of Brothers was a movie about the 101st Airborne Division, and there'll always be that Band of Brothers amongst the people that serve with the 101st Airborne Division, regardless where they at, where they're at in the world, or how long they spend with them. There's a certain amount of Brady Corps there, and pride that goes along with 101st Airborne Division that you'll never be able to get rid of, or it'll never die.
Great. Okay.
I will make one broad statement. They are probably the best in the Army itself.
The 101. Well, Mr. Hayes, I really appreciate you taking time today to talk to me, and in the future, we will, in the near future,